You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer. When I'm not doing this, I'm writing about NFL and fantasy football for sportingnews.com. So come over to the site now, check out all the good stuff we have coming out of week one, getting you ready for week two. And part of that is the waiver wire pickups. And today's show, it's Tuesday, so it's a weekly waiver wire time, and we'll have Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly join us, as he does, to break down some younger guys that are out there on the waiver wire. We'll talk a little bit about them as well leading up to it. But before we get into that, we have to get our final takeaways of week one of the 2018 NFL season for fantasy football. Jets, Lions, and Raiders, Rams were your games there on Monday. Now, the Jets, it was all Jets for the most part, 48-17 over the Lions. Both defenses had returns for touchdowns, but the story here was Sam Darnold looked pretty good, spread the ball around, 198 yards, two TDs, went to Quincy Enunwa and Robbie Anderson. So Enunwa was the go-to guy, had the 10 targets. Anderson only had one, but made it count for a 41-yard touchdown. 6 for 63 for Enunwa. Enunwa definitely high up there among the pickups this week. We need to see what was going on there, how the pecking order would be. Anderson is still going to be a big play involved, but clearly Enunwa, because he's a slot guy, he's a tight end type, hybrid type player, and this team doesn't really have a tight end or a traditional slot receiver, that makes a lot of sense that the rookie quarterback Darnold would trust him. So good to see there. Enunwa is definitely a hot pickup and maybe easily the top wide receiver to target there on the waiver wire here in week two. And I think he's going to have some good consistent value going forward as a wide receiver three, and definitely valuable in PPR. Isaiah Crowell looked good running. He only needed 10 carries to amass 102 yards because he had a 62-yarder as well there, with two touchdowns. So he looked good. The offensive line looked fantastic. Bilal Powell technically started the game. He looked okay as well, but Crowell looked fantastic there. 12 carries, 60 yards. So this Lions defense just looked lost with Matt Patricia. And then it looks like their offense also was a big-time struggle. And they couldn't run the ball. We talked about how much they wanted to improve running the ball. LeGarrette Blount got hurt. He looked terrible. Then the game flow just totally went out of hand. They had to use more Theo Riddick. The takeaway there from the Lions, even with Matthew Stafford having an awful, awful game there, the one TD, four interceptions, 36 yards, got banged up a little bit. Kenny Galladay is still a big part, and I thought this could be a problem for Marvin Jones. They go consistently three wide receiver sets. Golden Tate got his, working in the slot, 7 for 79 on 15 targets and a TD, but Galladay had more targets than Jones, 12 to 8, caught 7 for 114, while Jones was limited to 4 for 54. There were some chances in the end zone there in the direction of Jones, but clear like Galladay is going to be a threat to Marvin Jones' production there for sure, as they consistently stay there without the tight end threat in Detroit. And this running game right now, Kerryon Johnson, 8 touches for 37 yards, still work in progress. This Lions offensive line, in contrast to the Jets, looked atrocious here. So Lions, Galladay is another option as well to pick up. He'll be available in some deeper leagues. He was drafted in a lot of leagues, but Enunwa and Galladay, if you're hurting a wide receiver early, they're going to be key parts of their offenses going forward. Unfortunately, if you had a tight end go down, Greg Olsen or Delanie Walker, disappointing with that play. The Jets and Lions offer you nothing in that respect. So we'll have to talk about different guys that you look at there. Now we go to the nightcap. This kind of played out like we expected. It took some time because the Raiders got off to a hot start, but the Rams eventually pulled away by 20, 33-13, very similar to what we've seen in the Rams games before. Jared Goff, 20, 33 yards, 18 for 33. He didn't look good at times, but two TDs, solid performance there for fantasy. His typical performance that we saw in a lot of games last year. That's because they're going to run the ball, put up some big numbers that way, play some defense. So I think the passing yardage is always going to be limited for Goff. I think it comes down to how many times he can put the ball in the end zone. They all obviously have a lot of potential to do that. It was nice that he dumped it off to Gurley and he took it to the house, and Cooper Kupp as well, and a shorter touchdown. So that's going to be a thing if you have Brandon Cooks in a standard league. He's fine in PPR at 5 for 87 and 8 targets. Robert Woods was limited here to 3 catches for 37 on 9 targets. A lot of deep shots there, but Kupp was solid, 5 for 52 in that short score. So that's going to be the hardest thing with the Rams, is if they get up and their defense is playing the way it did with some major interceptions, including a pick six by Marcus Peters there, 3 picks of Derek Carr. If they're running well and playing defense and dominating teams, there's not going to be a lot of use for Goff. They still threw late in the game. 33 attempts is quite a bit. They can still do whatever with the balance, but the big games are not going to come for Goff unless they're in complete shootouts with other teams. Todd Gurley is fine going there, but Cooper Kupp, we really liked him. I think in standard leagues, Kupp is the better guy overall than Brandon Cooks at this point. Cooks will have his day, but they're going to try to bottle him up as much as possible because he's a big play guy and draw the attention that Sammy Watkins didn't get last year. So that's going to help Kupp as well produce in a lot of games. On the Raiders side of things, Marshawn Lynch looked good until the game flow took him out of the game. He had 11 carries for 41 yards. Not great, but did have a nice run on his touchdown. Unfortunately, the Raiders just absolutely take him out of the game. Doug Martin, 4 carries for 20, so he wasn't a factor, but it was all Jalen Richard, 5 carries, 24 yards, and 9 catches for 55 yards and 11 targets. So once they got way behind, and with their defense being bad, eventually that's going to set up a lot of this where you see Richard in the game flow, you hope for that Lynch touchdown early, which occurred here, to make him salvageable as an RB2, but then it gets ugly. Amari Cooper, just atrocious. 1 catch for 9 yards, or 1 rush for 9 yards, and 1 catch for 9 yards as well. That's a horrendous output from a guy that's supposed to be high-volume wide receiver 1. He only got 3 targets in a game where they trailed. It was product of the game plan a little bit with Peters and Aqib Talib shutting him down. It was a lot of Jared Cook, 9 for 180. So he's clearly the top tight end to target here if you lost Olsen or Walker, or you just wanted a little upgrade of that position. Jared Cook would be right up there. I think Benjamin Watson. You can look at Ricky Seals-Jones as well. The Rams get torched here by the tight end Cook. So when you look at Cook going forward against the Broncos, it's a little tougher matchup. The Broncos can be vulnerable against the tight end. They just allowed Will Disley to have a big game. But you look at that. So Seals-Jones, you follow because he's facing the Rams. And you figure Larry Fitzgerald's going to have a tough time there. A lot of underneath throws. Watson, just a reliable guy that was involved enough for the Saints there. But the tight end is definitely going to be something you target as well as a wide receiver this week. So Jared Cook, easily the number one add there. We're going to talk a little bit about if Jonnu Smith, Walker's backup, or Ian Thomas, the backup to Greg Olsen, the rookie from Indiana, can have some value there for the Panthers. So we'll get an idea from Eric Edholm on where you go from there, tight end, if you're really hurting for help. And it's a tough, tough position this year for sure. At quarterback, we'll talk about those real quick. I really like Tyrod Taylor this week. Looking at his matchup against the Saints looked bad, gave up a lot to former Bills quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, so Taylor can do some damage. Case Keenum as well at home against the Raiders, a pretty good option as well if you need him to play this week. And Joe Flacco looked pretty good, gets the Bengals this week, and can do some damage. And Alex Smith, pretty steady there as a player that you can plug in. Not a high upside type player. The Redskins, however, figure they'll be in a little bit more of a situation to throw up points there against the Colts. The Colts defense is pretty weak, and that's one thing about Alex Smith. His schedule overall is pretty weak, and he should be really owned in all leagues as a QB2 after finishing as a QB1 last year. So you're talking about a lot of these players and how they're going to help win games, affect outcomes of these games. Ever since I started doing this podcast, people been asking me, who do I like to win this week? Looking at the over-unders and examining those and the point spreads and the picks I make for sportingnews.com. Yeah, I'm looking at this all the time, but where you're betting is just as important as what team you're betting on. And that's why I suggest you go take your wagering to MyBookie. It's the easiest and most convenient place to play. They've got live in-game betting, great player perks there. And the best news of all at MyBookie is they're offering a special bonus there for your deposit if you use the promo code Locked On. So the promo code Locked On there at MyBookie is going to get you into the game and style. And if you're a fantasy player and not always interested in looking at the spread, that's fine. They've got you covered there as well, because you can bet the over-under on how much a player scores in fantasy in a given week. So that's great. All kinds of games for different players at different levels. So good time to get into the action by using that promo code Locked On and MyBookie. Best thing is you go there and you're going to get paid out right away. You play, you win, you get paid at MyBookie. Go check it out. Use that promo code. Take advantage of the deposit bonus. And once you're there, you'll be in one of the best places in business and start earning those rewarding player perks and the more action you get involved in. Joining me on Locked On Fantasy Football, as he always does here for Weekly Waiver Wire, it's Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly. Eric, it's week one, but there's already some big moves we have to make to help our teams get better here. And it always happens every year. When it looks like you're set, all of a sudden injuries happen and you're down on guys immediately.
Yeah, well, I'm down on everything. Week one, I feel like both of my fantasy team rosters are a mess. But and that's the thing, you know. You look back at last year, and there were some overreactions. There always are, and week one can kind of be the third preseason game, the de facto warm up for a lot of teams. But right, obviously, there's been some fantasy developments we got to get after here.
Well, the one that was a shock, because the Broncos actually ran the ball very well against the Seahawks. Their defense has kind of been depleted in that area. But the surprise was the exact same numbers from Royce Freeman and Philip Lindsay, not Devontae Booker, but Philip Lindsay was right there. He got the touchdown love there in the passing game with a nice play out there. Undrafted free agent, makes his team. They've been buzzing about him. Then all of a sudden he gets a big week one role. Can you tell us more about Philip Lindsay? Did you like him a lot in college, and is this surprising to you?
Yeah, I mean, he was used as a receiver a lot in college. Not a big guy by any means, but somebody who averaged, you know, about 5 yards a carry at Colorado as they kind of went from the, you know, the bottom of the Pac-12 up to being a competitive team in that conference. And so, you know, there was a good reputation about him coming out. I think there was some high hopes, you know, as he kind of headed into the draft process. But he got lost a little bit. And I can't tell you exactly. Obviously, the lack of size was concerning. But, boy, I mean, I think I thought he would be a day three draft pick at the worst. So it was a little surprising to see him slip through the cracks. But, you know, you go back and look at his preseason performance, Vinny, and everybody kind of saw, you know, okay, this guy earned his way onto the team and earned a role that probably Devontae Booker wasn't going to be great at, which is that kind of third down role. And I don't know, you just look at his college production, especially the last couple of years. I think he had like 30 touchdowns combined the last two seasons at Colorado. So local kid does good, and he's not going to get the same number of carries every week as Freeman, I don't think, but you'd have to think he'll be involved in the passing game. So he's definitely got some fantasy value all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a worthy pickup, and Royce Freeman owners is his frustration. But I think game flow might help against the Raiders this week to keep Royce Freeman in there. But it looked like they were willing to interchange those guys. So Booker can be dropped, I think, safely now, and you go after Lindsay. Now, a big issue with this week also is tight end. A lot of problems. You got Delanie Walker going down, Greg Olsen. Now you got Jonnu Smith and Ian Thomas, their direct replacement. Do you like any of those guys, or where else would you go at tight end this week if you need help?
Yeah, Jonnu Smith was another interesting guy. I think, wasn't he like a third-round pick of the Titans too, which I think probably surprised some people a little bit. And you know, maybe they didn't think a couple years ago they would go that high for him, considering they still had Walker in his prime. But, you know, interesting little player, kind of an H-back type and you know, more receiver than blocker. And, you know, had that unfortunate incident in college where I think his girlfriend's put boiled water on him or something like that. And that kind of became the butt of the joke and kind of what he was known for. But he was a productive player at FIU. I mean, he was caught a lot of balls there. So I like him from a production standpoint in the past. You know, Ian Thomas is really interesting because he's such a physical marvel. I mean, he looks the part. JUCO kid has overcome a lot. Both of his parents passed away at a young age. So you like the kind of pedigree from that standpoint. And maybe in, you know, 2 or 3 years, he's the better player. But I think right away, I would say Smith has, you know, something of an opportunity here to really kind of take the bull by the horns. I just think Carolina's maybe a little bit deeper in the pass-catching talent. I mean, DJ Moore couldn't even get involved in week one. I think he had, you know, 12 or 15 snaps on offense. So my gut feeling right now is that Ian Thomas is probably going to be employed more as a blocker. I think he had a couple of short passes in that opener. So he's not like a direct replacement for Greg Olsen in my mind, whereas Smith, I think, could be a pleasant surprise. You know, he might end up being a decent little player in that scheme.
Well, one guy I think we quickly faded as soon as he erupted and had a big game was Will Dissly. He was supposed to be the blocking developmental tight end. Here he goes off like faster than we've seen Jimmy Graham in maybe 5 years. But to me, I think the guy with Doug Baldwin out and with Graham not in there anymore, Brandon Marshall is suddenly very intriguing to me in this offense, just from a touchdown perspective and maybe the tight ends. Unfortunate you can't play him at tight end because he's going to be used that way.
Yeah, no, I think it's an excellent observation. I mean, Dissly, it's such a crazy story because, you know, I would say even probably heading in, you know, into the combine, few people really knew his name and they're starting to get a little buzz when we saw how well he blocked. He was a defensive lineman in college up until his junior year at Washington. So, yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I think he hit his season high in week one. Can't dismiss the two long catches. They were you know, really impressive shows. But I'd be stunned if he comes anywhere close to that kind of a weekly total again. So I think you're right. I mean, Marshall, yeah, you know, he's really the only big target they have, unless I'm forgetting somebody. But, yeah, I didn't necessarily think this is the way it was going to go. Marshall got drafted in one of my leagues very late, and I thought, that's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see that as a possible number two there. But, yeah, now he's, you know, he's heading back to Chicago, his old stomping ground. Heck, he's played for about six teams now or something. But that could be an opportunity. We saw what those Packers receivers did to the Bears secondary in the second half, especially the guys with some size like Geronimo Allison and Devontae Adams, similar types of receivers, I guess. You know, maybe he's a pretty good short-term play, and maybe by the end of the season he ends up catching 50, 60 balls, kind of the production we expected last year in New York.
Yeah, another wide receiver situation, and you pay attention to these Patriots pretty closely, but Philip Dorsett, Chris Hogan owners, I think were just in a ball curled up in a corner and didn't know what was going on, but we know this is what the Patriots do. They're going to spread the ball around, but they did make the swap for a first-round pick there from the Colts. He does have a lot of good qualities there, and he was very efficient. I think he caught all of his targets in that game. So I think there's a chance that Dorsett's going to have a regular role, although they did sign Corey Coleman. I can see Dorsett being maybe a big play guy that they use a little bit outside in some of the Brandon Cooks role.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, he's almost like a poor man's Cooks in some respects. I mean, you know, similar, you know, body size. He can be the deep guy. He can also do some underneath stuff as well. And you're right, just the efficiency. I mean, the receiving average wasn't all that impressive, but to catch every pass thrown his way and to see Tom Brady throw to him 6-7 times in the game and in the red zone, that opens your eyes a little bit. Now, you know, when Edelman comes back, maybe it's a different story. If Corey Coleman, like you said, if he kind of develops over time, maybe we reach, you know, change our stance a little bit. But you know, I said in the short term, I said, somebody's got to catch balls for them. Jacob Hollister's out. It's got to be either Cordarrelle Patterson, who got the ball a couple different ways in that game, or Dorsett. I mean, those are viable options. The Texans double-teamed Gronk, and he made two spectacular catches in traffic. So that's not going to happen every week. And I think, obviously, there's got to be a little bit of distribution with the passing game. So, yeah, he's part of the mix, at least for the next month, you would think, as they kind of shuffle the deck at wide receiver, I think.
Well, staying on the wide receiver topic here, we have two second-year players that suddenly have some good opportunities. John Ross, welcome to the end zone. And
yeah.
Chris Godwin did some damage. Which of these guys now, we have DeSean Jackson in the concussion protocol here, which of these guys longer term do you like to add to your team as a potential consistent wide receiver three?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I could probably go either way on this one too. It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, Godwin, there was so much buzz about him in the preseason because he looked so good. And I think there were a lot of people who were high on him coming out of the draft thinking, you know, how did this guy slip to the third round? He put on that monster performance at the combine. He was a good, productive player at Penn State. You know, this is year two. You know, the buzz just kept kind of building for him. Whereas with Ross, it took people kind of a long time to get back on his train, even though he was, what, the ninth pick in the draft. So I guess I would probably say with Jackson having such a big week one and now being a little bit of a question, you'd say short term maybe Godwin has a little bit more of a bump. But, you know, let's not forget, I mean, John Ross was somebody the Bengals believed in. You know, A.J. Green is still going to be the guy that everybody focuses on. Joe Mixon had the big game week one. He's still going to be there and be part of it, and they're going to try to get him the ball in end-arounds, deep shots, short stuff where he can kind of make people miss. He was such a good, like, tunnel screen guy in college and bubble screen guy, things like that. I would say short-term, Godwin has some really intriguing potential, especially in some games where they're going to have to do what they did Sunday, which is that shootout type of situation, you know, even with Fitzpatrick. But, yeah, I guess I would say short-term Godwin, long-term Ross. What do you think? I mean, is there a clear picture on either one?
Well, I think with the Bengals, they're more about maybe running, grinding some games out. Their defense is not too bad here. That's going to be the thing. I think there's going to be just more volume for Godwin in a lot of games where the Bucs are throwing and throwing maybe proactively or throwing from behind. So
yes.
So I think that helps Godwin, and especially if Jackson's out, because they were the either or on the depth chart there to start the season.
Yeah, I
think one guy that people were wondering about is Dante Pettis. He explodes on the scene. I really like his playmaking ability. I think he just needed a chance, and Marquise Goodwin getting hurt gave him the chance. It exploded right away. Now he gets the lowly Lions, who couldn't stop anything there in week one. Pettis, a guy that maybe Marquise Goodwin owners can look at?
Yeah, that's a good call right there. And you know, Pettis also another one who, you know, had a strong camp and preseason. The only concerning things, I think both his catches went over, you know, 20 yards in week one. So that obviously opens your eyes. I think his catch rate, I think they threw to him four or five times, so it was a little bit hit or miss with that. You know, obviously the yards per reception are a lot more flashy than the yards per target, you know, which is a stat a lot of fantasy folks are going to look at. I believe he put a ball on the turf, too. I have to double-check me on that. I can't remember if it was a punt return or if it was on one of his receptions or something, so I'll have to look into that. But, yeah, He's going to be a little bit hot and cold probably. And if your league does reward, you know, punt return, special teams, touchdowns for individual players, he's got a little added boost as well. But yeah, I mean, he was that type of player in college and a little bit better size even than Goodwin. I mean, Goodwin was obviously had his fantasy folks in his corner this preseason, and his late season work last year was reflective of that. So yeah, I mean, this is a second round pick. Vinny, this is, you know, top 50 guy in the draft. I think they traded up for him too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, he played for 4 years in a good program, produced, you know, had that one huge year with the 15 touchdowns. So, you know, maybe he's kind of a sneaky performer here where you say to yourself, they won't be afraid to go to him, I think, early on.
Now, like we did last week, and Jacob Hollister, of course, got hurt and didn't play, so we're still waiting to see what he does. But who's a guy that you're intrigued by just by looking at some of the week one action that you want to keep an eye on? Maybe not a pickup this week, but a chance to develop a larger role here pretty soon.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned Geronimo Allison last week, and I think, you know, as you and I were kind of talking about off air, TJ Yeldon is obviously somebody who, you know, is probably going to be owned in most leagues. Let's see here. You know, if you're in a deeper league, we mentioned the tight end problems. Maybe Jeff Swaim develops a little bit of a role in Dallas. Again, it's probably not going to have a huge upside. I think there were some missed opportunities in that Dallas offense for week one with Cole Beasley. There were a couple plays where he was wide open. Dak just didn't see him. There's obviously got to be something of a system change there. You know, everybody, you know, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones were talking about it. Dak was talking about it. They've got to find ways to kind of scheme the ball downfield, you know, and use design to kind of open things up a little bit. There was all this talk about, okay, was Cole Beasley going to be their number one? So he's certainly somebody that, you know, you have to consider. I don't know what to make of what Darren Sproles did in week one, if that's going to be kind of a regular role. Again, we're kind of talking veterans here, but those are some realistic options. And if people bail on the Chargers defense, I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the widespread reaction to week one, but I still believe in this group. I know it didn't look good week one, but, you know, that's a Chiefs offense that presents problems most teams aren't. I know they have the Rams in a couple weeks, but I still kind of feel like there's a chance here that they could absolutely still come back when Bosa gets healthy. Some of those young defenders kind of pick up the slack a little bit. They get they get one of their Corey Legit back in week four. So, you know, that's something to look at, especially with Buffalo on the schedule. I think Chargers defense could get healthy again. So maybe if somebody drops them, there's somebody you want to look at.
All right, Eric, great stuff as always, helping us break down if we should trust some of these guys that are out there on the waiver wire and can help your fantasy football team in week two and beyond. So thanks a lot, Eric. Tell us again where we can follow you, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Yeah, profootballweekly.com. My Twitter handle, Eric with a C underscore Ed Holm, EDHOLM, and hopefully give you a little better advice than I did in week one, but that's, you know, adapt and evolve. That's what we got to do here.
Yeah, that's what we're all trying to do, be better, a little bit better than we were last week, like every NFL team would say.
Yes, indeed.
All right, we'll try that next week. Talk to you then.
All right, Benny. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly for joining us here to help with our weekly waiver wire claims. And we talked about a lot of good guys. Well, I'm also pleased to announce there's more fantasy football help here on the network with Fantasy Football 24/7. The injury expert, Ethan Turner, just gives you the news, notes, updates you need to know, so you're on top of everything there that's going on in fantasy football so you can put out the best lineup and not be affected by injuries, weather, and all that good stuff. So a good complimentary show as we upgrade Experts Edition here. We get good insight there on the weekly basis of fantasy and things you need to know that are in the periphery of affecting your lineup in one position or another. Now let's close the show looking at a few running backs here, because we talked a lot about wide receivers and more on tight ends with Eric at home there. Running backs, TJ Yeldon. This is your last call for TJ Yeldon. We know Leonard Fournette has the injury issues, the durability, now another soft tissue with a hamstring, may or may not play against the Patriots, but Yeldon is one of those plug-and-play backs, good offensive line, good running game system, playing the Patriots, is figuring going to be a lot of Yeldon touches there. So if Fournette doesn't play, Yeldon's going to big role. Even if Fournette does play, you want Yeldon, that stash, because he's an instant starter for you no matter what the matchup is, because he's not facing the Jaguars' defense. That's part of it. So Yeldon is the top running back if he's still available. Last call to handcuff your main guys, and this is why we strongly urge and recommend you do that. Now, James White is in a timeshare with Rex Burkhead there. Sonny Michel could be active. I don't know. I think it could be another week there with the knee injury. Hasn't done much practicing. James White heavily involved there against the Texans. He's going to be a big part of the game plan against the Jaguars. And going forward, James White's a trusty guy. So that deep league PPR flex play, James White looks the part. It's hard to trust the Patriots' backs from one week to another. But with Burkhead not at 100%, being a little bit limited with touches, Michelle not making impact there, White is really the main guy they can look at. And Jeremy Hill was also placed on injured reserve after injuring his knee there in that game against the Texans. So James White, you look at there for sure as an add. Philip Lindsay, we talked a lot about with Eric. I think he's definitely a good pickup there. Royce Freeman, owners, I wouldn't say rush to try and box his backfield, but if you had Devontae Booker behind Freeman, Lindsay is the guy you want instead. And then the Colts backfield, is it time to pick up Nyheim Hines? I think so. Jordan Wilkins looked okay, but Hines has the biggest upside of any Colts back with Marlon Mack still hamstrung there. So Nyheim Hines, if you're looking for a little bit of stash and extra help there. Jordan Wilkins was owned in a lot of leagues and drafted because of that situation with Mack. But Hines was a little bit under the radar. He was a higher drafted rookie there, can do a few more things. Change of pace on both these guys, but I think Hines could have a bigger role there in the Colts game, kind of like Corey Clement was for the Eagles for Frank Reich last year. So Hines can do that a little bit better than I think Wilkins, and Wilkins was definitely disappointing in his debut there with the Colts. And Buck Allen, we have to look at as well. Buck Allen's going to be involved a little bit more with Kenneth Dixon, their nursing knee injury. Alex Collins looked okay, but he did lose a fumble. So if that happens again, you could see some change there with Buck Allen, a little bit more versatility on all downs. But Allen, to me, is not very special, but he's still a guy that you look at as a backup stash there this week. But clearly the way to go this week is look heavily at the wide receivers and tight ends if you need the help. That's the way to go, mainly on the waiver wire ahead of week two. So there you have it. There's Locked On Fantasy Football waiver wire weekly edition there for week two. Thanks again to Eric Edholm for joining us, as he always does. Check out his insight. Check me out on Sporting News. And until next time, this is Vinny Iyer for Locked On Fantasy Football.